in this story. It's the young woman. I mean, the ancient pyramid, as you can imagine, with kings on top and then their generals below them, and then maybe the wife of the general and then her servants and the slaves, enslaved people on the bottom of the pyramid, is flipped on its head in the story. The ones who have no power in society's eyes are the ones who channel God's power. A young woman and this new prophet. They're the ones who are at the bottom of this pyramid. And for Naaman's healing, God uses these unlikely vessels. And friends, this is how God works. This is not an odd story in the sense of that, because there is this resounding truth that echoes throughout the pages of the Bible, that God chooses to love, but not only love, to work through and move among and with the outcast and the downtrodden and the least, the seemingly powerless. That is who God is. I mean, think about this biblical thread. Let's start toward the beginning and go to the New Testament. The story maybe starts in some respects with this old childless couple who then give birth to a people as numerous as the stars, Sarah and Abraham. And then a band of enslaved people are freed from Pharaoh's grip and then become that nation that's supposed to bless the nations of the earth. And then God calls these wild and woolly prophets like Elijah and Elisha, and they have the boldness to call rulers to account. And then foreigners like Ruth play these pivotal roles in salvation history. And Queen Esther foils a plot. And David knocks down the likes of Goliath. A little shepherd boy takes down a giant. And then God becomes incarnate in the son of a peasant couple in the backwaters of the Roman Empire, and then inaugurates God's reign in the company of fisher folk and tax collectors and sex workers and lepers. There's them again. I mean, do you see this thread here? And the same is true of the early church. The Apostle Paul, and he writes to the Corinthians about the mystery and the foolishness of the cross. And he says to them, "Consider your own call, brothers and sisters, for not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, things that are not, to reduce to nothing things that are, so that no one might boast in the presence of God." Because what Paul was saying there was that the cross of Jesus redefines God's power altogether. It takes our typical notions, the notions of power as the world defines them, and it takes the cousins of power, wisdom and status and pride and strength and all of that, and recasts them in a new light. And that's the light of love. You see, the real power in Naaman's story is his healing and his rebirth in the river, not his military conquests. For what he becomes known for in history is this healing. And that's what enables him to proclaim in the end, now I know that there is no God in all the world except Yahweh. It's like Desmond Tutu, who was a former Archbishop of Cape Town in South Africa, said this, and I love it. "We used to say to the apartheid government, you may have the guns, you may have all the power, but you have already lost. Come and join the winning side." You see, the real power, God's power, is always the power that wins in the end. And it might not look like it in the middle of the battle, but the real power wins in the end. And so I think it's important for us to think about this and to be reminded of the way that God's power works in the world. For instance, on this week of Independence Day, when we turn on the news and what is celebrated is military pomp rather than these ever-evolving ideas for which people have sacrificed their lives, a land of liberty and justice for all, a place where all people are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Or in the midst of whatever political crisis it is this week or this month in the year, when we of a certain political persuasion get tempted by the thought that true lasting change comes in the form of just the right candidate and not in the movements of ordinary, everyday people who are organized out of a sense of their common humanity. That's how salvation comes. Or when we personally, in our own day-to-day trials, feel weak and even powerless or maxed out or at the end of our rope and are still operating off the assumption that we can do this, whatever this is, on our strength alone and not with the help of the one who made us and loved us. How and through whom God exercises her power. It looks differently, and it comes through unlikely channels. May we be open to it whenever it meets us. Amen.